You're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's consulting editor, Sandeep Khanna. So the first story we'll discuss is the one on three charts that show why demonetization is so painful. So yeah. We already know that demonetization is very painful and there are long queues and, you know, banks are out of cash, etc. So what is this story saying more that is so special?
Yeah. Hi, Nandita. Hope you had a good morning. You didn't have to queue up for too long.
I haven't still gone to the banks. I've been putting it off.
That's one of the consequences of demonetization. Yeah. So that demonetization is obviously the news of the week. It's all over the place and every aspect of it is being discussed in various ways. But I thought this database story, it's based on three charts. Looks at the fundamentals of this whole issue, which is that why is cash so important to a country like India?
True.
And they've used basically three units to actually look at that. The first of which, the cash to GDP ratio in India is very high, not just as compared to Nordic countries like Sweden, where it's actually just about 1.7%, whereas in India it's over 10%. But even countries like South Africa and Brazil, and linked to that is the cash deposit ratio again, which again for India is much higher than it is for the global average. And the third chart that they've actually looked at is to me the most fascinating of the three, which is we've looked at the number of Jandhan accounts, the ones that have been opened over the last two and a half
True.
Years, and that number actually is very high. It's about 25 crore accounts that have been opened. But now we find that most of them, a very large percentage of them, I think 25 to 30% of them, have zero balance. So what that indicates to you is that, you know, the most vulnerable segment of the population, which for whom these accounts were actually specially created, are not using these accounts.
Right.
So what they're using really is cash. And they are the ones, in a sense, who are impacted by this demonetization thing, because since they haven't been using the bank accounts, they probably don't have car, they don't have their, you know, the way to go in there and get their money out of ATMs. They're the ones the worst hit.
Right.
So these three charts, actually, I thought it's an interesting way of looking at why cash is so critical to India and why, therefore, this whole crunch that we are seeing in these last 8-9 days over about this demonetization issue.
Right, great. So the other story, that one of the other stories you've picked is also linked to demonetization, which is this innovative guy from Mysore who's making gains, you know, with this indelible ink.
You know, it used to be said that during the Californian gold rush, the people who made money were the ones who supplied the shovels and you know, the axes.
Right.
So this is a similar story. I thought it was very interesting because there's an oversupply of stories on demonetization and all the queues and what the government is doing and the criticism of that. And through it all, there's this little company in Mysore. It's an old company. It's about almost 80 years old,
right.
Which is obviously smiling all the way to the bank, because suddenly comes this notification from the government saying that, you know, those who've deposited once, they'll have this ink stamped on them. They probably are not, with all the elections that we have in India, they're never out of business, but
right.
This is a complete bonanza for them. Suddenly out of the blue, they get, I think, about an order for 300,000 bottles. I don't know how much that adds up to in rupees crores, but I believe each bottle is for about 120 rupees.
Yeah.
So it's a windfall gain. It's an interesting way of also looking at the little parallel economy that, you know, that happens when such a phenomenon takes place in a
right.
country.
Interesting. Moving on, the next story we discuss is coming from the Tatas and Cyrus Mistry, who's seeking to formalize, you know, Tata Trust, say, in the group's firms.
Yeah, so that's been the story of the month, and I suspect it's going to continue for a very long time. And if you really look at this whole Cyrus Mistry versus Ratan Tata issue, at the heart of the problem, you know, the lack of definition of a role between the trusts and the group companies. And Shelley's story is very interesting. It's a good news story because she spoke to obviously a number of people who didn't want to be quoted, but insiders who said that, you know, as far back as in June, Cyrus had actually got a committee to start looking at the role that these trusts should play in terms of the group companies.
Yeah.
And it seems... this governance report was actually supposed to be presented on the 24th October, the fateful day when he was ousted as
right.
chairman. And actually, it points to two, three things. One is obviously that there has been simmering discontent for a while, you know, on what the role of the Tata Trust, which incidentally are obviously at that point of time were and even now are chaired by Ratan Tata and the group company. So obviously, this is not something that suddenly happened. This whole problem has been in the works for a very long time. And to that extent, Shelley's story was an interesting scoop as a news piece.
Right. Great. Moving on to something which is completely different is this piece by Namita Bhandare, who talks about when misogyny trumps ideology. And she's basically referring to the elections to sort of talk about this. So why did you pick this?
The Trump election was obviously the news of the last fortnight.
Right.
But Namita has looked at a very unusual and a rather sorry aspect of the coverage that happened once he was elected. Mm. And a number of people actually, what they did was they tweeted out pictures of the First Lady of the U.S. from her earlier profession. And one, of course, it's none of anybody's business what she did in her career
right.
earlier. And two, linking it, you know, whatever your views might be about Donald Trump as president or as candidate, linking his wife's previous career to him in some way, obviously kind of one very
bad
sexist
taste.
And
yeah.
terrible taste. And the interesting thing that Namita, who's our gender editor, she pointed out was that it's the same sexist bias that a lot of people found, repugnant about Trump himself when he was, electioning, when he was campaigning. It kind of, the same bias that we have that, what a lady does or what a woman does in a professional career has some correlation to what she does in her personal life. It showed up here. It was obviously in bad taste, and it was a wonderful piece by her to actually point out that a number of Indian commentators as well actually retweeted that picture, reinforcing the same bias.
Yeah. Moving on, there's this other story which talks about Tukaram Munde, who jogs double up as anti-corruption exercise. So this is again about this municipal commissioner.
It's the feel-good story of the week.
Yeah.
It's the kind of story that you wish you read more of.
Often.
It's about this guy who's the municipal commissioner of Mumbai. And basically what he does every Sunday morning when he goes out for his run, he runs an open house in the sense that anybody can run with him and share their problems about the city with him or talk about corruption or somebody who's, harassing them for issues.
Right.
And the story is actually about what he's doing in terms of ridding the city of corruption. But I thought the entry was very interesting. I mean, this is a man who, he says, look, I'm going to be jogging. Why don't you come along and jog with me? He's been transferred some 8 times in the last 10 years. So he's obviously used to moving around and being on the run.
Yeah.
But, for citizens, an interesting way, you join a commissioner for a jog and, you talk about your problems and then he actually addresses it. I thought it was a fascinating story.
Yeah.
And Abhiram, who did the story, I thought he did a commendable job of actually looking at it.
Then the next story we discuss is the piece which Sukumar wrote on facts and Facebook, which is talking about the problem with news on social media and how there's, so many times it's fake.
Right. Yeah. So, today we have actually, in the last couple of days, we've got confirmation that fake news actually was more read on Facebook during the last phase of the election than real news. And it points to a fundamental problem with the consumption of news on social media. Sukumar, of course, looked at it from various, perspectives, not merely in terms of the fake news. He also looked at it from the perspective that when we consume news, what's happening is that it's being actually customized for based on what you've been reading. And in a sense, it reinforces the biases that you already have, which could lead to a very odd situation. I mean, unlike when you're reading news from any other mass media, where the reader actually has a wider palette of reading various kinds of opinions or news stories. And of course, the issue of the fact that a lot of news, even on the best of sites, even on the best of blogs, as it happened just with the election this time in the US, can be, downright wrong. And of course, the other aspect, which is that what they call fake news. So I would urge anybody who hasn't actually read the piece to go and take a look at it, because I think all of us are probably guilty of falling victim to or in danger of falling victim to this this problem.
Yeah, especially if it's on Facebook, which is now probably the most, seen as the most powerful media company.
Absolutely.
Right. So we end with this story on the movies, which is about, in Pakistan, Bollywood's loss has been Iranian and Turkish films. They have gained. So which is... pity.
Pakistan and India, among the various things that they've shared, including hostility, there has been a lot of, cultural exchange in terms of entertainment, in terms of movies. I mean, a lot of Pakistani serials have been watched in India. And of course, in Pakistan till recently, 55% of their box office collection actually used to come from Hindi movies, Bollywood movies. They were popular in Pakistan. And then this ban was imposed on all forms of this thing there. So they needed to replace it with another form, because I don't think there is enough. There are lots of great movies made in Pakistan, but not enough of them being made. And unusually to me, but what's interesting is they've turned to Iranian cinema, which to my mind is among the best cinema in the world, you know. They probably make movies which are way better than Bollywood movies. So I endorse their taste. And in a sense, it also gives a fillip to movies from Iran and from Turkey, because they don't have very large markets. And Pakistan consumes a lot of that. So it's an interesting story. It's, you know, it also shows that I suspect that if they get used to this cinema, maybe Bollywood find it a little more difficult next time when they go in there to sell their movies in Pakistan.
Right. So that's it for this week. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us.
Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening and see you next Friday.